Revelation chapter 17 and 18, we are going to look at the mystery of Babylon. And it'll probably be a mystery when we're done, too. It's reflected in several ways. We're going to see that there is a religious or a spiritual influence called Mystery Babylon that has been around for thousands of years. There is a political or economic Babylon that will come to bear in the last days and is certainly surrounding us now. Many scholars have divided these two chapters, that chapter 17 that we'll look at today is that chapter that deals with spiritual Babylon, and chapter 18 deals with economic or political Babylon. I'm not sure if it's that easy to draw the lines. I think there's a lot of overlapping. But certainly today we will look at spiritual Babylon. Next week we will continue with the study. Now, there are six chapters in the Bible, and it's an interesting number because in the book of Revelation, the word Babylon's mentioned six times. It is interesting that there are six major chapters, Isaiah 13 and 14. You want to read that on your own. Jeremiah 51 and 52. And Revelation 17 and 18. You want to read those. Those are six chapters that deal specifically with Babylon. Because one of the things about literal Babylon, the destruction of Babylon is described in Isaiah and Jeremiah as the fact that it would be completely thrown down. It would become the habitation of jackals and of dragons, and the water would come up and cover it. No one would ever live there again, that it would be completely destroyed. Babylon has never suffered that kind of an experience to date. So that must still be future. The Medes and the Persians took over Babylon without a struggle. They took the city without knocking down a gate or a wall. Alexander the Great used the same city for his headquarters when he ruled that part of the world. He died in the southern palace of Babylon. Babylon slowly decayed through the ages, but it was never destroyed in that manner. So there is still a destruction of Babylon in the future. Now the question is, what Babylon is that? We'll look at it at least. I'll take a stab at it. You have to study for yourself. I could be wrong. Saddam Hussein has been for 20 years now writing an open-ended check for the rebuilding of Babylon, the ancient city on the Euphrates. And that, of course, is an interesting undertaking, and it is in process to do it. Next week we'll look at some articles that deal with that. The theme of our study today is given to us in the first two verses. Look, and there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials. John's been in this scene long enough, he's recognizing faces now. And he talked with me, saying to me, "Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore," this religious system, "that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication." So, it's interesting. This is one of three times in the book of Revelation where the phrase "come hither" is used. In chapter 4, verse 1, the voice comes to John as a trumpet, "Come hither." He's called to heaven. Very important point in the book and a significant scene that sets the stage for other things. Now, in chapter 17, verse 1, for the second time, he hears this phrase, "Come hither." So I believe then this is a very significant scene also. The third time is in chapter 21, verse 9, where he's told, "Come hither," and he's shown the holy city Jerusalem descending from heaven. So three specific things and two specific cities that he is to look at. And by the way, throughout the Bible, at least spiritually, the Bible has been the tale of two cities. You thought you, when you read that in high school, it was some other thing. Here, spiritually, these are the two epicenters of spiritual influence in the world. One is Babylon, one is Jerusalem. And in many ways, there is a spiritual tale that goes back and forth between those two cities. And I think the mystery of Babylon, the harlot, has much to do with that struggle. Now, the theme that we look at here is the judgment of the great whore. "Come hither with me, and I will show thee." He's going to be taken to a vantage point so that he can see this great whorish religious system and the judgment of it, or the sentence passed upon it. That is what we want to take note of here, whether we get all the details right, whether we agree on everything. is not the point. The point is that this chapter shows to us the judgment of this whorish system. That's what we're told in verse 1. It says this whorish system is seated upon many waters. Now look over in verse 15. It says, "The angel said unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." So John will see the judgment of this whorish system at the point of its greatest influence. It no doubt has influenced world empires in the past, but in the last days, when this judgment comes upon it, it will have a global influence. It will be influencing the entire world, whatever this whorish system is. So take note of that. We know its great, great influence there. It says, "The kings of the earth have committed fornication. The inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication," much like chapter 14, verse 8, where it says, "There followed an angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." So the earth is intoxicated, their perception is altered by this great system, and the leaders of the world, the kings of the earth, have bought into it, whatever it is. So it is part of a spiritual, political system, at least initially. And we'll look at that as we head into it. Now, you want to, at least in your mind, know that it is distinct from the beast that it sits upon. Look in verse 3. "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns." That is not the woman. No harlot could stay in business with seven heads and ten horns. That's the beast that has seven heads and ten horns. And as we look at it, you want to know that she is distinct from this beast. Now, chapter 12, which is just to the left, so you can turn there. Chapter 12, verse 3 says, "And there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon." There's a scarlet beast. "Having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his heads." Look over at verse 9 there in chapter 12. "Again, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world." So it identifies for us there the great scarlet-colored beast with seven heads and ten horns as Satan. Look in chapter 13, verse 1. "I stood upon the sand of the sea. I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." Same imagery we have. Here's the difficult thing. In one place, in chapter 13, the great red beast with seven heads and ten horns is described as that old serpent, the devil. So no doubt, whatever form it takes, the motivation and inspiration behind this beast is Satan himself. No doubt this beast takes the form of a system, a governmental system, is also identified with the same imagery. That's why it's difficult. And ultimately, a particular individual is identified as the beast. So there is some overlapping here. It's much like Wall Street. That's both an institution and a place. It means more than one thing to us. And here the beast seems to have a broader application in some of these verses. So the woman is separate. John says he's carried away in the spirit into not the wilderness, but literally there's no "the" in the Greek. "I was carried away in the spirit into wilderness." That's all. Into a desolate place, into wilderness. We're not sure. Some scholars feel, and it could well be, that's describing the earth immediately after the flood. We're going to look at that in Noah's day. The other possibility is, you remember Jesus saying when a demon is cast out of a person, he travels through waterless or desolate places. Maybe it is just a spiritual realm where this spiritual influence sits, which is a desolate place or just wilderness, just a barren spiritual place. I'm not sure. "And I saw the woman sit upon the scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and in scarlet color." And she's all the things, by the way, it tells us in the New Testament that a virtuous, godly woman should not be. The woman was arrayed in purple and in scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations, which is always idolatry and other worship in the scripture, and the filthiness of her fornication. Now, the imagery throughout the Bible is when we turn from the true and living God, whether it's in the Old or New Testament, and worship another God or another, turn to another religious system, that is spiritual fornication or adultery. And that is the context we're being shown here. She is arrayed in royal colors. She has been involved in world empires. She has been involved in the wealth of world empires with the gold and jewels and precious stones and so forth. And she has been that religious system that has intoxicated world empires. And upon her forehead, verse 5, was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. The mother, or the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth, she is that which has given birth to all other religious forms. That's what it's telling us here. She's the fountainhead of all spiritual harlotry and abominations. Now, if you'll turn to Genesis 10, turn to that's way to the left. In Genesis 10, we have a scene where the earth has been purged by the flood. The earth has been cleansed by the flood. And God then describes to us how mankind spread out across the world again and gives us the names of the lineage and of the families from his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, my one son, Josh. He's 9. He loves it when we read this story because he can't imagine somebody named Ham. Like being named Bologna or something in his mind. But from these three men and their wives, the earth is repopulated, and this chapter gives us what is called the Table of Nations. Now, it's very accurate in its description. Dr. William F. Albright, who was not a believer, who is probably the most notable anthropologist, archaeologist of this century in that part of the world, studying that the Near and Far East, said that this Table of Nations in Genesis 10 is unparalleled in its accuracy. It gives us the fountainhead of China and of Africa and of all the nations. Tells us how they spread. Well, down in verse 8, it tells us of one of Noah's grandsons, Cush, that he begot Nimrod. Now, it's interesting. Nimrod, the simple verb form, just means rebellion or one who rebels. Nimrod began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, that is soft in its translation from the Hebrew. Some scholars feel that he a mighty hunter of the souls of men. And it isn't just before the Lord, like in the presence of the Lord. It is defiantly in the presence of the Lord. Some translate against the Lord. The Bible wouldn't just tell us this guy was great with a bow and arrow for no reason. He was a mighty hunter against or defiantly before the Lord. Wherefore, it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter against the Lord, before the Lord, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Now, this is ancient Babylon, long before Nebuchadnezzar. And Erech and Akkad and Calneh gives the influence in the land, and you want to take note of this, of Shinar, which is Iraq today, Mesopotamia. And it tells us here that he was the one who built Babel. Babel is an interesting play on words, much like Jezebel, which can mean either the chaste one or the dunghill. That's a perfect setup for her and her deception, isn't it? Well, here, Bab is the word that means gate in the ancient writings, and El is the word for God. So it is the gate of God. Yet, it also means confusion. It's been synonymous with confusion. It says God confounded the languages there. That's why it's called Babel, confusion. So I think just the fact that Nimrod, and God had told Noah and his sons to cover the earth and to repopulate it. Yet Nimrod here is gathering all men to one place. He is building a city called Babel, the gate of God, and building a tower there that they might be involved with astrology and worshiping the stars, the planets and the courses, the host of heaven, and all kinds of idolatry, pantheism. But more specifically, he begins a religion and a religious system that is in contrast with the altar that Noah builds after the ark lands on Ararat. It was just Noah and his sons. Noah knew well that there was one way to approach the true and living God. That was through the bloodshed of an innocent substitute. Substitutionary atonement was God's plan. And he sacrificed there on an altar he made animals before God for his sins and to give thanks. Well, the fountainhead of all other religions after the flood, as it was with Cain in Eden, is here in Babylon. Not only that, specifically, Nimrod takes a wife named Semiramis. The ancient Sumerians get their name from Semiramis. Semiramis takes the title to herself, the Queen of Heaven, and says that she has a miraculous conception and gives birth to a son named Tammuz, who was born miraculously. Tammuz, at some point in his life, is gored by a wild boar and dies. And some say in 3 days, some say in 40 days, but he is resurrected again and comes back to life. And then the sign of the cross becomes synonymous with the Tau, the first letter of his name, Tammuz. And the burning of the Yule log and all that. I'm not going to ruin your holidays. I just... But the idea is, it is the mother-child cult, primarily that is born out of ancient Babylon, and it is because Satan has realized if you can't beat him, because all his plans were destroyed in the flood, you join him. And in Genesis 3:15, God had promised that through the virgin birth, the seed of a woman, the Messiah, the deliverer, would come, and that would be the defeat of the enemy. So Satan himself establishes his own mother-child cult. It is where we get the imagery of the Madonna. That goes way back before the Roman Catholic Church into Babylon. A woman with a halo around her head holding a child with a halo around his head is Semiramis and Tammuz. Now, take note over in verse 25, because we have an interesting note and it helps explain some things. It says, "And unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided." This is 100 to 150 years, it seems, after the flood. And after God disperses the languages at Babel, that's in the next chapter, we don't have time for that. But what scientists today call the continental drift, because they feel that North America fits nicely in Europe and South America fits nicely in Africa, that it says right here that that is a reality and that it took place in the days of Eber, and that is why he named his son Peleg, because it means divided, because it was in his days that the earth was divided. Now that's an important statement, because we realize that in at least 40 cultures, people tell you that Noah's flood is not a real record. In at least 40 cultures, most of them ancient, around the world, there is record of the flood, a worldwide flood, in at least 40 different cultures. And with the Incas and South America and the Aztecs, all around the world. Also, the imagery of the mother and the child is spread around throughout the world. India, China, South America. And how would this same imagery take place? It's because God dispersed them at the Tower of Babel and then divided the continents and spread them out across the world. And they all were fresh. And their minds and hearts were filled with still the record of the flood and this new religious system that is born here. And that then spread. Now from Babylon, it spread to the Sumerians, which are more ancient than ancient Egypt. And from the Sumerians to the Phoenicians, the same form of worship, they called it Ashtoreth, which was the mother that miraculously conceived a son, and they still called the son Tammuz in Phoenicia. The Phoenician influence went to Egypt. In Egypt, the virgin mother was Isis, And the son was Osiris or Horus, both names pointing to the same personage. In Greece, it became Aphrodite, the mother, and the son, Eros. In Rome, it was Venus, the virgin mother, and the son, Cupid. Interesting, still with the bow and arrow. You thought that had to do with Valentine's Day. It has to do with Nimrod, the mighty hunter. In India, it was Isi and Iswara. In the Far East, in Asia, Sibeli and Dios. And the point is, you can track this all down. This imagery had spread around the world. Back to Revelation 17. So the mystery is, there in ancient Babylon, there was the mother or the fountainhead of this false religious system that stands in opposition to the true story of God's Messiah and the salvation of mankind. It says, I saw, verse 6, the woman, not drunken, it's drinking the blood of the saints. He sees her in action, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, he says, I wondered with great, same word, wonderment, same word both times. John says, I was awestruck because it was a religious system with religious trappings, and yet it was devouring true believers through the ages, and drunk with the blood and drinking the blood of the witnesses for Christ and of the saints of God. Now, there are those that are going to tell us that this is a picture of the Roman Catholic Church. You have to understand, this woman, whatever she is, was riding empires thousands of years before the Roman Church began. Will the Roman Church play a part in it? I think the Protestant Church will play a part in it. After the rapture of the church, after true believers are gathered out of every denomination and church system, and all that's left on earth is the human church, no doubt the ecumenical movement will spearhead, Roman church that's left may spearhead the gathering of all faiths under one roof. If you go to the Vatican today and you tour, there are treasures. There are a number of paintings of a woman seated upon a scarlet beast that they will tell you on the tour represents the church, the Roman church. There is a large tapestry, and on the tapestry there is a scarlet-colored beast. This is in the Vatican. Seven heads, very accurate. The seventh head has 10 horns on it, just the way the Bible says. There is a prostitute riding that beast. And the sign underneath of it says, the Mother Church. Now, I think it's much broader than that, Babylon, because it affects all of our lives. And I think it is anything that would seduce us away from the true and living God. Perhaps it finds its spearhead in the mother-child cult. But I'm more worried about Babylon on MTV with my kids. I'm more worried about Babylon with Dungeons and Dragons. I'm more worried about 100 other Babylons that are more threatening with their moral standards and deceptions than I am that particular one. But no doubt, as we hear politically words today, like inclusion, inclusive, the Church of Jesus Christ is not inclusive. It is exclusive. There is a narrow gate by which you may enter. If you are on the Broadway, and it bothers me, most towns have a street called Broadway. If you're on Broadway, the Broadway, it says that is leading to destruction. Many there be that go thereon. That is not an inclusive party. The way that leads to eternal life is narrow, is the narrow gate. Few there be that find it. And yet there is a movement in the church today to be inclusive, just like there is in politics. Up here, and you can look at it afterwards, I just threw it up here, is one of the updates of Encyclopedia Britannica from 87 or 88. There is a picture of the Pope with 14 religious leaders from different religions around the world for a day of prayer. Shintoism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Baha'ism, major religions from Central Africa. But I can't imagine Elijah having a prayer day with the prophets of Baal. The prophets of Baal, let's get together and have a ecumenical day of prayer kind of thing. So there's already a move underway, not just to be ecumenical in the sense of let's bring Protestants and Greek Orthodox and Russian Orthodox and Roman Catholic together. There is that ecumenicalism. The thing that's strange is there is a much broader ecumenicalism today to bring Islam and Judaism and Christianity and Buddhism and Baha'ism, to bring everything under one roof, which is Babylon. But I think that the great whore that sits upon many waters is much broader than just that one thing. John is wondering, look in verse 7. The angel says unto me, why are you wondering? Same word as John used in verse 6 of himself. Why do you marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, that has 7 heads and 10 horns. So the angel says, John, don't worry, I will clean things up for you, clear them up. I see you're confused. So listen to the angel's explanation. I'll read down to verse 12, verse 13. The beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and goes into perdition. They that dwell in the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. Here is the mind that has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sits. And there are 7 kings. 5 are fallen, 1 is, the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th and is of the 7 and goes into perdition. The 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as of yet, but receive power as the king, as kings, 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind. They give their power and strength to the beast. Boy, am I glad the angel cleared that up. You know, I appreciate the effort, but I'm thinking, if this is supposed to straighten it out in my mind, I'm a little confused here. I definitely don't have the mind that has wisdom. This angel says to John, John, I see the confused look on your face. Let me explain. I'm thinking, wow. Must make sense in heaven. Well, let's take a stab at it. The beast that thou sawest was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder. Their names are not written in the book of life, in the foundation of the world. When they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. Now, it definitely harks at least to chapter 13, where the Antichrist receives a mortal head wound and is dead and then comes back to life again. And certainly the timing of this scene in the future seems to be midpoint, and we'll tell you why, in the tribulation period, in the 7 years. So it at least reflects the leader of this system, who was, who then was not because he was killed, and then the Satan coming out of the bottomless pit revives that body and brings it back to life and gives him all his power and authority. And it tells us right back there in chapter 13 the same thing. All the people of the world wonder after him. So it is reflective of the individual. The interesting thing is, as we read on, it's also reflective of his kingdom. Because we have the Roman Empire not being defeated so much by an enemy, but disintegrating, and an imperial empire being revived again in the last days. The Bible clearly teaches that there will be a one world government with 10 horns, 10 kings or kingdoms. And I think for a while, the entire church was very strong that that was the European community. I think that it may be broader than that at this point. Because it seems they have also, some of the movers and shakers, divided the earth into 10 regions. And then the Club of Rome and the Bilderbergers and the Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateralists, all those guys. And those 10 regions. And it's interesting, Gary Call, and I'll put this down so you can come and look at it, the 10 regions are drawn out here. This was written actually before NAFTA, and the United States, Canada, and Mexico are Region 1. Now, of course, we've amalgamated somewhat into an economic supposedly power with that uniting. Area 2 is Eastern Europe. Area 3 is Japan. Area 4, Australia, and the southern tip of South Africa. Area 5, the former Soviet Union. Area 6, Central and South America. Area 7, North Africa. Area 8, Central Africa. 9, Indonesia. And 10, Asia. You can look at it afterwards if somebody stab at it. But certainly now that is what they are working toward. That's fine with me. It means Jesus is coming. It means that verse 14 is wonderful because it says, "These shall make war with the Lamb. The Lamb shall overcome them, for He is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with Him are called and chosen and faithful." That's the exciting thing about all of this. But there are 10 regions that will emerge, and that also is a revival from the dead, as it were, a resurrection. Verse 9 says, "Here is the mind that has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sits." Now, anybody in John's day would have thought that that was Rome, because Rome then was called the city of 7 mountains or the city of 7 hills. You've heard that. So in John's day, and certainly that was where the woman was sitting at that point in time. But as we move on to verses 10 and 11, it's obvious that's broader, because it says, "Then there are 7 kings," not just in Rome, "that are represented by these 7 mountains." So these 7 mountains are 7 kingdoms. It's an idiom throughout the Old Testament that points to empires, mountains. "There are 7 kings. 5 are fallen, 1 is, and the other is not yet come." The 5 that are fallen, that have come under the influence of this mother-child, whorish, cultish religious system, are these: ancient Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece. That's 5, he says. 5 are fallen, 1 is, that was Rome in John's day, and the other is not yet come, that is emerging today. "And when he cometh, he must continue for a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th, the Antichrist himself, and is of the 7, and he goes into perdition." This is what the Bible says. In the first 3.5 years of that last 7-year period, the Antichrist will come to power as he comes to power as the 7th part of this beast's influence. And 10 regions are allied with him and give him all of their power. There will be riding on his back an ecumenical religious system that is global. But he will not tolerate that more than 3.5 years. It says here in verse 15, "He said unto me, The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And the 10 horns thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore," the religious system. "They shall make her desolate and naked, shall eat her flesh," they're going to devour her physical form, "and burn her with fire. For God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill His will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city," and its present tense in John's day, "which is reigning," that was Rome in his time. It was Babylon in Daniel's time. It was Medo-Persia in the time of Darius. It was Rome in the time of Christ, the one that was reigning then, which reigneth over the kings of the earth, was Rome. And certainly that is where the whorish system was sitting in that day. But it says in the last days, in our days, as this system arises, a one world system, there will be a one world religious system, a Babylonian system with all face under one roof that emerge with it. Because, you know, the movers and shakers are smart enough to know they are never going to bring about a one world economic political system unless they can get religious factions to agree. I mean, the tension in the world today is over Islam and Judaism and Christianity, the Middle East. The tension is not political or economic, it is religious. So they will form this one world system, one world religious system, one politic, one economic system. And halfway through, it tells us clearly in 2 Thessalonians 2, chapter 4, that the Antichrist himself at that point will go into the temple in Jerusalem and proclaim that he himself is God, no longer pointing people to this whorish system. It tells us in Revelation 13 that anyone who doesn't worship him as God will be put to death. So in the midst of it, he will cast this whorish system off of himself. He himself will become the religious, political, economic system of the last 3.5 years. So he himself is even the eighth, it says. And he will bring destruction to wherever she is sitting. And if it's Europe, if it's Rome, then there is the possibility that he gathers everything for the last 3.5 years back to Babylon. In Zechariah chapter 5, beginning at verse 5, it says, "Then the angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, Lift up now thine eyes and see what is going forth. And I said, What is it? And he said, This is an ephah, largest measure of the day, common measure, speaks of commerce. It is an ephah that goeth forth. He said, Moreover, this is their, whatever there is, resemblance through all the earth. It's global. Behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead, and this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah. And he said, This is..." In Zechariah 5:8, there's a definite article. This is the wickedness, a woman in the midst of commerce. "And he cast it into the midst of the ephah, and cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof. And I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had the wings of storks, an unclean bird. And they lifted up the ephah between earth and heaven." Now, next week in chapter 18, it says that Babylon is the haunt of every unclean bird. "Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these bear the ephah? Where are they taking world commerce? He said unto me, To build it a temple in the land of Shinar. And it shall be established and set there upon her own base." So there is definitely a picture of world commerce and religion being moved back to a Babylon that is rebuilt, that has never been subject to the judgments described in Jeremiah and Isaiah. In fact, in their excavations there in the ancient city, they have uncovered Esa Gila, which is the ziggurat, the tower that went to heaven for the astrology. In modern Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's day, it was the temple of Marduk, but the ancient name Itamen-Anki, which they've discovered there, means the temple of the foundations of the heaven and of the earth. So we have this picture of the judgment of a great whorish religious system. That whorish religious system was born and is the mother of all whorish systems, and it was born all the way back in the wilderness in the days of Noah, in contrast to and in competition with God's religion, which Noah propagated with a substitutionary atonement, looking forward to the Messiah. Satan started his own mother-child cult that was prominent in Babylon and in Sumeria and in Phoenicia and in Egypt and in Assyria and Babylon, in Rome, in Greece, in Medo-Persia. and will once again, it seems, be amalgamated under one roof at one point in time. This is after the true church is gone, after all the believers are gathered out of our congregation. Hopefully that means all of you. If you're not sure, come up the front and pray with us. Get saved today. You need to be taken out when we are taken out. All of the true believers will be gathered out of the Lutheran Church, and out of the Methodist, out of the Baptist, out of the Catholic Church. True believers, wherever they are right now, will be gathered home to Jesus with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and the trumpet of God. Then the frame of the church, the flesh of the church, the physical substance of it that remains, that is not spiritual, will be that which spearheads, and no doubt Roman Catholicism with the greatest influence will be in the center of that spearheading, bringing all religions under one roof. This is the great whore, and she will have a global influence over people, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And it says here that she will be judged by the Antichrist and his kingdom as he proclaims himself to be God. So we are witness to, in this chapter, after the judgment of the great whore that has influenced the major world imperial empires.